Welcome to the Round 14 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week we are unfortunately not joined by the ultimate slacker, FB Donkey, who's not showed up today, but we do have two extremely competent guests in his place, in regulars of the show. Faz, welcome back, mate.
Yep, thanks a lot, Marcus. Great to be here.
And we've also got Dunny joining back with us this week. Hopefully we haven't dragged the curse back in this week, Dunny.
We'll have a look at that in a minute, mate, but thanks for having us back.
Just a quick rundown of what we're going to cover this week. We're going to look at finishing touches to our teams. So I think quite a few of us are getting down to our last premium upgrade or two, whether that's waiting on a premium like Jake Lloyd to fully bottom out, or whether that's navigating through the buys and sort of having to wait for that to be over before you can trade in your ideal target. I think this week's kind of the round to be thinking about how to put that finishing bow on your team. So that will be the focus on this week's show. So let's start off with a personal update before we get into the show. Faz, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure I'm not alone here, but this final round of the buys was definitely the worst for my team. I ended up with 16-19 this week, so I think I take the cake for the lowest scorer on the podcast. That's all my ranking drops back slightly a little bit. I'm down at about 2,500 now, but given that I came into the buys at 4,000, I'll take that. I think you have to view it sort of as a three-week block, given that, you know, some teams are stronger in some buy rounds than others in others. I was let down a little bit by some of my premiums this week. I didn't have too many rookies on field, but Buddy scoring 48, Tom Lynch 37, a few of those scores, Hanbury 66, Beam 66, Rockliffe 59. Those poorer scores sort of held the team back a little bit. But, you know, as with most people, Dangerfield with the V on him sort of saved the weekend. And I didn't actually pull the trigger on any trades in this final week. I was going to be compromising my team quite a bit, I felt like. So instead, I just decided to hold off on the trades. I had 18 starting already, and that means I can sort of pick from an open field this week for my final upgrade. Dunny, how did you go this week?
Just pipped you there, Faz. I had 16-21 this week, and I had 18 on field. I did need to do one trade to get to that 18. I traded out Sandlands through Nank into the ruck to bring in Isaac Heaney, which with his 106 I was really happy with. But as for his teammate, Buddy, well, he let me down with his 48. I also had Scooters 44. Marchbank had a bit of a quiet one with 55, and I had Barrett's 54. And obviously Rocky's 59. Watching the game on Saturday afternoon, I was kept looking for Rocky. I was like, where the hell is he? Even sent my son around to look at the bench to see if he was actually there, make sure he hadn't gone down the rooms. But yeah, he was still there, which was a bit disappointing. But I was actually going to pull three trades this week, and at the last minute decided not to, which was really good because my trade-in targets actually didn't do too well, one of them being Steph Martin. So I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah, nice one, Dunny, especially after Goldstein had a good game too and the talk of Gorn coming back. Hopefully that works out for you in the longer term. It sounds like we all dealt with a bit of premium pain this week. I'm fairly similar. I only had four premiums score above 100. One of them was a new recruit in Elliot Yeo, so I was happy with that. I was considering doing three trades, but I only did two. So I brought Yeo in, and I also brought Luke Ryan in because I figured one rookie over another is not really going to make a huge amount of difference. So I was already facing 18 on field this week, and I just, traded in a rookie donut, which is fine. So I scored 16.36 for the week, and that pushed me down about 300 spots to 724th. Pain points, Tui 78, Beam 66, Rockliffe 59, Joel 73, Scooter 44, and Tommy Lynch 37. But glad to be out of the buys, glad to have moved up, and as we'll move on to our league and group updates, very, very happy with our community results. So all things considered, feeling pretty happy. I think it's interesting to see just how close the three of our teams were this week. So Faz, what was your score again?
16-19, so 19. Two behind Dunny, and then where did you get
16-36, so 19 points between the three of us. It could have been
it's not too bad.
Yeah, but consider that a draw in the Supercoach world. So, all right, hopefully the second half of the season we'll see us finish off as strong as we've started off so far. To a quick league update, after the buys, we are now sitting with even more leagues in the top 20 than we started off with, if you'd believe that. 15 of the top 20 leagues after round 13, which is, that's astonishing. So I'm clapping.
Well done, community.
Yeah, to nobody in particular around me right now, but hopefully you're getting the positive vibes through the speakers, because massive, massive shout out to you guys and thanks for representing us and continuing to fly the flag. We've never finished on top of the overall league rankings, and FB Donkey and myself have been pretty reticent to bring that up this season for fear of cursing it. But, you know, hopefully this year will be the year that we break the curse. And if you've been listening to us for 9 years, you know the sub story by now. All right, to a quick group update, I'll give a shout out to everyone in the top 20 leagues in our Supercoach Coach group. If you believe it, we have seven of the top 20 at the moment. So Kyle's Tyrannosaurus Tex, well done to you, currently sitting at third. Dr. Bone, Set and Forget, well done to you, sitting at sixth. Paul's PK's Bench Warmers, sitting at 14th. Patrick's Orange Goblins, sitting at 16th. James's MTM All-Stars, sitting at 17th. And Jamie's Guns, sitting at 20th. That's amazing. Seven of the top 20 are in our Supercoach Coach group, and it's something that extremely, extremely proud of. We only have less than 500 members in that group, so as a percentage of the Supercoach playing population, it's a drop in the ocean, but I think... yeah, we're showing our stuff. So congrats to all those people in the top 20. And in fact, anyone, I think if you're in the triple digits, it's a pretty good result as well. So if you're sitting in the top 1,000 after the buys, a shout out to you. In terms of a top score from our group this week, it was Matt Sween's Machines that took out the top score with a score of 2065 for the week. And that pushed Matt up into the top 5,000. So congratulations to him. And that rounds up our update for the week. So let's get on into the show now. I think the last few weeks we've started off with, you know, trade out targets, trade in targets, and then we've peppered rookies and injuries either at the start or the end. But now that we're down to finishing touches, I think I'd like to address it position by position. So that's the way I've structured this week's show. We'll talk about sort of the key issues or the key decision points in each position for the week. So let's get straight into it now. We'll start off in the back line this week. And I think everyone knows who we're going to talk about in the back line this week. We've been flagging him for weeks now because he had a poor score just before his buy. But the question here is from Jason Green, is Jake Lloyd a lock? Faz, were you planning on bringing him in this week as well?
I was throughout the buys, as most people were. Unfortunately, I think I got used to these whole three trades a week thing and didn't really factor that in when I was looking. I held off on Ryan because I wanted Stewart's score on field last week.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, you know, Stewart to Ryan's one trade I'll be making, and then I'm still one premium down in the midfield with plenty of cash to get up there. But so for me, that's probably going to be the decider in that. To me, the difference between points of Powell Pepper versus a true premium, I think, are going to outweigh probably the difference between Newman and Lloyd. So for me, I'm probably just going to be holding off on Lloyd, but I can only see that being a one-week thing just purely because I don't have enough trades, and I plan on bringing in Lloyd next week. The big one for me is that if we remove his score of 4 from the game that he got in concussion, he moves up to an overall average of 99.3 this year, which places him 5th amongst defenders behind familiar names Doherty, Adams, Laird and Robinson. So all those guys, probably Robinson's the only one who's not in just about everybody's team, and we all rate Robinson, I think. So the fact that Lloyd's the next player down below those four blokes, to me, makes him just about a lock.
I'll agree with that, Faz. I think I've actually been a Lloyd owner for quite a few weeks now. I did have to endure that 4 back in round 10. And just further to your average discussion there, Faz, you know, if you look at his last 6, excluding that 4, he's averaging 101.5. But with a break even of 50, he's obviously going to go up in price this week. So, yeah, you need to be prepared for that if you are going to hold off. But for me, I think, yeah, he's pretty much one of those must-have in the – yeah, he'll be in the top 6 scorers by the end of the year, I think, quite comfortably.
Yeah, I think if he scores about 100 points, he will increase in price by about 20,000, which will put him at about 430, 435, which even though it's not ideal to not get somebody at the bottom of their price cycle, still good value for a bloke that, as Faz said, if you strip out his injury-affected game, actually sits in the top 5 defenders. And the top 4 are fairly clear too. So to sit 5th is a pretty good sign, I would have thought. All right, so I guess the question really comes down to whether or not to hold off on a week or not. But sort of even if you were facing a situation where he was your seventh defender, I'd be very tempted to find a way to bring him on as a pivot. And then whoever your weakest D6 is, you can use them as a loophole together with Jake Lloyd. If you get an injury in your backline or your midfield, he can potentially cover both depending on your DPP flexibility. So even if I already had a stacked backline, I'd still be tempted to trade in Lloyd. The question is, though, I suppose, and this one comes from Kane John, should we trade Newman to Lloyd this week or at least hold off for one more? I guess linked in with this question is Newman potentially a keeper, I suppose. So Nick Newman averaging 92 off 9 games, which is pretty great. I mean, his lowest score is 59, but then the next lowest is in the 70s already. He's had a 150 to help prop his average up, and having sort of come in and then being dropped and then come back in again, I think is a fair accomplishment. I don't know how willing I'd be to sort of hold him for the entirety of the season, but definitely while his break even's only 59 and he's averaging 92, I'd be tempted to hold on for one extra week. I guess if Lloyd's going to go up in price more than Newman, and Newman to Lloyd is your move regardless, the question is, do you pull that trade this week anyway? I think the only reason you might hold off on Newman to Lloyd is if you potentially are going to use a different player to trade in Lloyd and hold Newman potentially for the long run. I think if you're just going to make the trade next week, it seems silly to wait.
As you say, for that with that break even, I'd certainly be looking to hold him another week if I was smart enough to hold him when he got dropped. And he's that kind of player who, you know, as you say, you can keep as your bench cover if you need to, or he's going to be a really easy step to a, you know, to a good player like a Lloyd up next. So I think if you've got someone else you can trade to Lloyd this week, if you really want to get Lloyd in, I'd be doing that and holding Newman for one more week if you can.
We'll move on to the midfield now. The first question here is from Brett Mollison, and he's asking about Rockliffe. Do we keep him in hope of a quick recovery or trade now before he bleeds too much cash? So I think he scored about 90 in his return from injury after the bye, and then this last week, 59 was very poor. So break even absolutely through the roof at the moment. As a follow-up to that, before we actually get into that analysis, though, Andrew Ferguson did reply to Brett's question and commented that he supposedly had an illness for the week and only played 59% game time. And then we had another response from Tandy saying that he was seen throwing up. So I don't know how much truth there is to that. I have heard whispers about potentially it was groin soreness. So the rumor mill's sort of going at the moment. Yeah. Some people are saying he still has a sore shoulder. Dunny, I think you can speak to this one a little bit. What would you put it down, having watched him over the week?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, it was mostly the third quarter that he spent off. I think he was only on field. I think Frico reported that he was only on field for about 7 minutes in that third quarter, because that was a quarter that I couldn't find him. Yeah. And then, during the last, he did come back on. He was leading up to the ball. His kicking was fine. So I'm not sure where this rumor of a groin injury came from. I haven't, I didn't see too much that made me think it was a groin. During the game, a few people did tweet me that he was crook, and some people saw him throwing up. So, from that point of view, I'm happy enough to go with that theory for now, because I didn't see anything to the contrary. If he hadn't come back on for that last quarter and actually, run and taken some grabs and taken some kicks, thank God he did to get some points. But, I would have thought maybe there was something to that groin, but I don't think they would have sent him back out there given that they were getting fairly badly beaten and risk him getting further injured.
Being a Rocky owner, it's hard to trade him out. I think the fact that people are considering potentially still trading him in is always a danger sign. And further to that, even though he's had this drop-off coming back from injury, his average at the moment is still 113.8, which puts him at the seventh highest scoring midfielder for the year. So I think you need to pay extra attention to premiums that have that ridiculous top-end scoring potential, because it helps negate so much of the downside potential. So if you look at most of the top eight midfielders for the year, they all have massive upside. Dusty Martin is currently the second averaging, top averaging. Obviously, massive upside. Rockliffe, still seventh, even though he's had a downswing. Rory Sloane, another example. Getting tagged and people are really frustrated at the moment, but that upside is seen that largely negated. Whereas if you look to somebody who's a little bit more consistent, whose low side is potentially a little bit more like the 90s, in maybe a Scott Pendlebury type, because his upside hasn't been as dangerous this year. He's still averaging well, 112, not that far off, but he sits just outside of that. So I think there's something to be said for Rockliffe's 170s and Dusty's 170s because they just help with any poor games that premiums just tend to experience throughout the year. So I'd be very wary of trading out a player like Rocky because he could go 130 the next 2 weeks and make you look really silly really quickly. Faz, what are your thoughts?
I was just going to add, if anyone can hit a 192 break even, surely Rockcliffe's the bloke. No, I'm just glad to hear Dunny's thoughts that hopefully it's just a short-term thing. I am a Rocky owner as well and only a recent Rocky owner. I brought him in after his buy, so to have to trade him out already would be pretty disastrous.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'll be honest, that's probably playing a bit of a role in my decision-making is just not wanting to be proven wrong so quickly.
Yeah.
So yeah, for me, I think it'll be a hold on Rockliffe and just back him in to turn that around.
All right. This next question here is from Richard Berry. He's asking whether or not we should hold Dane Beam. So a lot of people are considering fringe premiums that they've kept throughout the first 13 rounds, but they're now sort of reconsidering upgrading on for the finish. And I think a lot of these marginal or potentially marginal premiums need to be addressed as soon as feasibly possible when you've reached a close to premium state because you have a decreasingly small amount of games to get your return on investment from. So, you know, if you trade now, you only have 10 rounds to see the gains in a side swap. I almost think you need to hit the trigger on it relatively quickly. So I can understand looking at potentially trading out Beams this week, and that definitely more attractive than next week and the week after and the week after that. And so for somebody like Beams who hasn't, you know, averaged 115 in a while now, I see a bit more legitimate reason in potentially trading him out. So Beams is averaging 105. His last four games, 132, 127, 146, and then 66. So to me, this seems like a bit of an overreaction to the 66 because the three preceding is pretty fantastic. That's a 130 plus average. But I'm a Beams owner still. So that's definitely a biased view. Danny, do you still own Beams?
No, I don't own Beams, but you know, if I had Beams, I'd definitely be holding him. I don't like trading out guys like that, you know, at this stage of the season, to be honest. I think that's a bit of a luxury trade, and unless you're absolutely stacked everywhere on the field, I'd certainly be holding. I'll back him to turn it around as well, I think.
The other thing to think about is what is the value of a trade?
Yeah.
So on average, you kind of want 200 points from a trade, but obviously, there's diminishing returns from a trade because it's harder to get points scored later in the season as compared to when you make a trade at the start. So if you're looking at 250 points at the start of the season, 200 points in mid-season, and 150 once you get into the last 10 rounds, 150 points from a trade over the last 10 rounds would still require an improving average of 15 points. Now, unless you see anybody as definitively able to beat Beams by a 15-point margin, I really struggle to see the validity in that trade. And just to put into context how easy it is to get those points back in the face of an injury, if you are faced with any bloke who is out for 3 weeks, that's in many cases with people with not enough trades, a keep scenario. But in reality, if the difference between a premium and a rookie is 50 to 70 points over the course of three rounds, that's, you know, 150 to 210 points in covering a premium with a side swap instead of a rookie. So you do need to be quite cutthroat in terms of your side swaps at this stage of the season. And I just don't see anybody really cutting the mustard except for maybe Beams to Dangerfield. All right, next question is from Mark Needham. Scooter, trade or hold? Talks are that he's still a chance for this week. They're not ruling him out. He's still a test. My thinking is that they will be extremely unlikely to risk him. So they're just saying that. But for me, it feels like a foregone conclusion. They won't really be there. I'm willing to be happily surprised. But at 372,000 with a break even still of 74, having averaged, you know, 100 plus prior to having an injury afflicted game, if he does play this week, will you trade him or would you keep? If he doesn't, the same thing. Faz, any thoughts?
I say I might be the only one on the show tonight that's not a Scott Selwood owner. I think the fact that players, the coaches out there were still trading him in this week following his bye. Unfortunately for them, they got bitten by the injury coming up this week. But people out there obviously think that he can keep his scoring up. Obviously, his price increase will take a bit of a hit with that 44. But as you mentioned earlier, the break-even is only at 74. So it's not as if it's completely halted that rise. So if you rated Selwood earlier, I think, which obviously if you got him in your team, you do. I don't think that that even a one-week injury would be enough reason to trade him out. But yeah, that's all coming from someone who didn't bring him in originally.
Donnie? Yeah, I'm a Selwood owner as well, boys. I will be holding him for now. I think a few factors in that. I guess the fact that he's listed as a test rather than a straight up 3 to 4 weeks. I expect that he'll probably miss at most. I think he'd miss two. And, our regular rule is, two games hold. And I think, as Faz mentioned, there's a bit of scope for some more price rises in there as well. I'd like to see him rise a bit more so that it's a very almost straight swap to a fallen premium in a few weeks' time. So I'll be holding on to Scooter for now.
So I'm going to hold on to Scooter, but I'm only going to hold on to Scooter because I'm trading in Jake Lloyd and I still have Nick Newman. So I'm either going to put Nick Newman score on field or Scooter Selwood, and I assume I'll take Jake Lloyd in whichever spot is weaker. So that's why I'm keeping Scooter, because I can loophole him with another potentially 90-plus player. So I think the danger with keeping Selwood, if you're not in that situation, is he scored a 44 in round 13. That's going to be in his price movements for two more weeks. Let's say he misses next week. Round 14 and round 15, his price is still going to be stifled. And then it's going to take potentially two more rounds after that to reach his true price potential. So we're talking about trading him out in round 17, 18. If he doesn't miss a game, 16, 17, and then you get an upgrade for five rounds. Like, it does seem super fringe. So I'm only keeping him because I can loophole him with another bloke that's close enough to being a premium. If I were in a situation where I could comfortably upgrade him to a true premium without missing out on a Jake Lloyd type, I probably would this week. He is my M8 at the moment. I think it'd be a different story if he's your M9. If you brought him in as bench cover at 280K, would I consider keeping Scooter at 280K? Yes. If you had an Ollie Wines at M8 and you had a Scooter at M9, that's a whole different equation now, because Scooter allows you the ability to loophole between his score and Ollie Wines for the remainder of the season, and that helps mitigate the risk that Ollie Wines potentially doesn't average, that true ultra midfield premium stats for the remainder of the season. So I think Scooter is useful in niche scenarios, but to me, Scooter was there to perform a role. He's not performed that now due to unfortunate circumstances. If you can use him in a different role, I would. If you can't, I would trade. All right. So off the back of that, there are a few people who are looking at potentially trading out Scooter this week, depending on their teams, or if not Scooter, just completing their last midfield upgrade or whatever. So for those blokes, I just wanted to just do a quick temperature check on who we thought the top five midfielders were. I think most of our listeners will get a bit more of a consistent view of that from Mark and myself. But while we got both Faz and Dunny on the show, I thought it'd be a good opportunity to get your top five. So I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but I'll start off with my own, and hopefully that gives you a little bit of time to think about it. Hopefully it doesn't create any sort of confirmation bias, but my five, I've picked on consistency and history. So Dangerfield, Mitchell, Neil, Selwood, and Pendlebury are my top five finishes. Interestingly, although I talked about large scores propping up players like Martin and Sloan, I think in calling the top five, I'm trying to be quite safe. So I think Martin, Sloan, and that are still good shots at being in the top eight, but they are potentially going to be, 6, 7, 8, whereas I'm a bit more confident that the consistency of these blokes will see them potentially, 115 plus, which is a comfortable, top five player. So Dangerfield's obvious. Mitchell, his lowest score this year, I think, was it in the 80s or something? His next lowest is up in the hundreds. So he's just that consistent this year. There's nobody else getting points. He gets a ton of it. He doesn't make the most of it, but I don't see him averaging much less than that. He's that consistent. Lockie Neal is the other one that he's had a poor game. I think 55 sort of two cycles ago, or two games ago. So he's literally at the bottom of his price cycle at the moment, which is another reason for recommending him this week. But apart from his 55, I think his next lowest is an 80, and the next lowest after that is in the 100 range. And then I rounded up with Joel and Pendlebury because Yeah, Joel Selwood and Pendlebury haven't had the most dominant of seasons, but they are literally 2 points off the top eight. So based on the history, I would punt that they remain in the top five on the finish. Hopefully there's a bit of difference between our top five. Faz, what, can I put you on the spot next?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Can't be completely different. Dangerfield's got to be in there, yep. Of course. I'll back Dusty in to continue his fine form this year. Full disclosure, he is in my team, so I'm going to happy as well.
Yeah.
I'll have to chuck Tommy Mitchell in there as well. I'm not a huge fan of him as a footballer. He doesn't do anything particularly exciting, but God, he knows how to find the pill. And you've really got to respect that at some point. Lachie Neale, I'm not sure, but I am looking at him very strongly to come into my team this week. Just that little discount that he offers. Most of the blokes I'm naming, I think, are above the 600 grand mark, with Lachie Neale down at 560. I think that's a real bargain. I've left Neale out. I'll add Pendles in there because he's just a gun, has been doing it for so many years that you'd sort of back him in to bring it back around. And I'll round it out with a barracking for my own footy team here and say Zach Merritt. He just
not a bad bet, to
continues
be fair.
To rack up the pill. For some reason, just doesn't get tagged. I guess Essendon have got a few other blokes out there with Heppel and, you know, Watson and Goddard that have probably a bit of a bigger profile out in the league than Zach Merritt does at this stage. But yeah, little Zachy just does all of the pressure acts as well as racking up huge numbers of possessions. So I'll chuck Zach in to round out my top five.
Donny, how about yourself, mate?
Well, you haven't left me a lot of uniques there, boys, but I reckon I can throw one in there. But look, I have to throw in Danger. There's, you know,
yep.
Everyone has to have Danger, and he's in 65% of teams at the moment, so I'm not sure what the other 35% are doing. But anyway.
Checking their teams, probably.
Yeah. I'm not a Dusty owner, but I'm going to back Dusty in. I think he's been, I think he's shown enough this year to say that he can keep that scoring up. So I see him in that group. If you'd asked me 3 weeks ago, I would have said Rory Sloane's a lock for that group as well. But I think, you know, the last few weeks where he's been tagged out of games worries me a little bit in terms of bringing him in as one of those players. But Tom Mitchell, I've been an owner of him since day one. I agree with Faz. He's not the flashiest player, but he certainly finds it and seems to be doing pretty well with it. I'm going to throw in a guy who probably, just because I saw him tear it up on Saturday afternoon, Dane Zorko. He was absolutely everywhere. He's been really good this year. And I think he's taken his game to that next level that he needed to. So I think I'm going to back him in to be in that top group. And my last one, I think I have to throw in Danger's partner in crime, Joel Selwood, in a very tight finish against Zach Merritt and Pendles. But I think, you know, Joel just knows how to get it done and has done it over a number of years.
Yeah, I like the Zorko pick, Donny. I think doesn't get the accolades he deserves in the Supercoach world just because of his odd positioning, and he's had, you know, rocky patches in the past with injury or whatever. But yeah, he's currently the sixth highest averaging midfielder at the moment.
Yeah,
and
I think, sorry, Marcus. Yeah, like I think I've the last two or three years I've had him because he's been a forward, and I think we all overlooked him this year because he lost that forward status.
Yeah, and I know Live the Dream, when he came on in the preseason show, he actually talked up picking Zorko over Rockliffe and Beams. Mark and I both thought that was nuts because we started both Rockliffe and Beams, but Zorko sort of trumped us all. So, yeah, interesting one. The question will be, can he sort of stay out of the sub-70 range? And if he can, that'll see him quite comfortably average in the top five, top eight going home too, I would have assumed. So, all right, I like that. Thanks for your thoughts on that, boys, and hopefully that helps inform any decisions that anyone's making over completing their midfields. All right, we'll move on to the last section of the week. Let's talk about rookies really quickly. There's two to talk about, Luke Ryan and Callum Brown. So Tandy asked about Luke, and you have the Ma ask about Callum Brown. Faz, do you have a rookie that you have your eyes on as well?
I'll just chuck in Declan Mountford as well.
Bubble, played on the weekend.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yep. So I think he played one game earlier, your first game maybe?
Round one, yeah.
And JS was, job security was shaky then, and then got dropped for 12 more rounds and then came in after the bye. So some question marks, but a worthwhile consideration as well. Luke Ryan seems like a slam dunk to me. I traded him in, even though he faced the bye last week, because he seemed the most obvious. So even if you didn't need the cash, I'd be very tempted to just trade down to Luke Ryan this week to park some cash for future upgrades. That's how sort of confident I'd be with him. I think he's shown decent scoring potential. We've talked about him in the preseason. He's mature. So, yeah, I can't see too many downsides.
There's not many reasons not to pick Ryan.
Yep. No, agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess the question then is, if you're looking for a downgrade or two downgrades, or if you already traded in Ryan like myself and you needed an alternate, or you didn't have a background downgrade position available, between Callum Brown and Declan Mountford, who would you be sort of looking at? So Callum Brown played the one game, his debut game prior to Collingwood's bye. Job security, I think, is still a risk, but the mid-forward swing option and his price point are what has people interested, I think. And then, of course, you got Declan, who, to be honest, I think has similar concerns about job security as well. Do you guys have any more information about either of these two, Faz?
I just did a little bit of research on Mountford. I know that they seem to have been playing him a bit more through the midfield in the twos, and I assume that's where he played just last weekend. So potentially a bit of a role change. But, yeah, as a second-year player, went pretty low in the draft, so it's not as if they sort of feel they need to give him games. So, I think it's a bit of a toss of the coin. And if anything, the DPP of Callum Brown, particularly if it's going to be that sort of last spot in your midfield, if it's, you know, you've got your eight players and he's the third bench spot, you can sort of afford to hold a donut there. And if that's, you know, if it adds some flexibility to your team, it might mean that you can use sort of Greenwood as a floating cover player between forwards and mids, then that might be enough to give Callum Brown the nod.
Yeah, look, I agree with what Faz was saying there. Look, I don't think he or Mountford have excellent job security. If I had to rank them on just job security, I'd probably suggest maybe Mountford, only because of Vickers Willis's injury. That's the only reason. I was actually surprised that Mitch Hibbert didn't come in instead of Mountford. But I think he's a good option. But I think for me, the swinging option of Callum Brown is probably the key. And just given the name, etc., Collingwood will be loath to drop him after one or two games. I think they're likely to keep him in and give him a bit of a run as well.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point that you bring up about Greenwood, Faz. If you have a pivot player for Brown who's a rookie, it's a lot more tempting a trade-in option as if you just had, you know, your Dalhouse types as a premium swing, because in order to use Callum Brown as a donut, you'd have to move a premium out of position to do that. Whereas with Brown and Greenwood, if they're on opposite lines, you have the genuine ability to flip Greenwood into the scoring position when necessary. And further to that, you can flip Brown into the non-scoring position to use a loophole as necessary as well. So the floating donut, something we talk about, the floating donut is definitely better in the form of the floating rotating donut. So Callum Brown definitely seems like a decent option, even though he might not be a decent option because he's actually playing or scoring. All right, let's round up the show with a captain's corner. Have either of you blokes looked at your captaincy options this week, Faz?
Started having a bit of a look. Unfortunately, Danger is on the Sunday this week, and he plays the early game, but knowing how poor I am at checking my phone over the weekend, I don't think I could back in Danger with the V, hoping to get to a computer or phone before the 3:20 or 4:40 game. For those that are better at technology than I am, and that's a pretty good option, I think, is Danger into Dusty. You won't have a full game of Danger, obviously. Outside of that, gets a bit slimmer. Penderbury plays on Saturday afternoon, so he's one that I'm looking at. Yeah, don't like to pick players that are going up against the Bombers, so that rules Hannah's out. And I think just if Rockliffe was just an illness, I'm a bit hesitant to give the reins to him. So fortunately, I don't think I helped much there. Have you blokes got any good options?
I guess for me, there's a couple of things that I just sort of mentioned about the captain's option there. Just with that option you've got there, Faz, for those who are technically minded, if you're going to play your VC on Danger and move it into Dusty in that 3:20 game, there's a fair overlap there. And just watching Danger's scores over the last couple of weeks, he seems to be getting a hell of a lot of points in the last quarter. So just, you know, you might be think, oh no, he's having a shocker, and then move it on to Dusty, and then he comes home like a steam train and has like 40 or 50 points in that last quarter. to push himself up to where you would have kept him. But for me, I'd be looking at someone potentially like Tommy Mitchell on Thursday night against Adelaide. Bit of a risk though, so I'm not sure that I would be taking him. Taylor Adams against Port Adelaide, or even Adam Treloar against Port on the Saturday, could be where my VC ends up going, and then using Danger as my potential captain. And just to throw one other wild card in there, could be Elliot Yeo against the D's at home on Saturday night.
I think what we probably should note as well is, unlike the buys, we don't have the same flexibility in choosing your vice captain because you need a non-playing player. You can't just use a buy player to achieve that effect. So my options shrink to Darcy Cameron and Mitch Hibbert, essentially. Those are my only two non-playing players. So I'm going to have to choose my vice captain from at the latest, the first four games. And so because of that, I'm going to take my vice captaincy option from the Brisbane Lions GWS game. And I'm just going to take the punt on Tom Rockliffe, because I'm very, very likely going to go with Patrick Dangerfield at home against Freo. And so I'm going to want a really big score to take it over Danger's score. And so that's the logic behind going Rockliffe over Tom Mitchell, because if Mitchell scores 115, I really won't know what to do with that.
Yeah, I think that's some good advice there, I think, Marcus, that Tom Mitchell is just a bit of an – when it's in that first game and it's not, and it's a bit of a 115, 120, it's a bit of a, you know, what do I do there sort of thing. For those of us with Luke Stranadica from Freo, he's a perfect option for that game with Danger.
Riches of options there. All right, nice one. I don't think you can – still doesn't enable you to take Danger as VC, which is still something to know.
No, he'd need to be your captain, yeah. Mm. Sorry, you'd need to be taking your VC over Danger if you were going to use Stranadica.
Mm. Thanks very much, you two, for joining in Mark's absence. I think we did a really smashing job. So hopefully our listeners got a bit out of that, and we're all in decent spirits after the bye. Again, massive shout out to our community, to our Patreons. It's been great to get your continued support and words of encouragement from the entire community. And just keep up the positive vibes, you know, join onto our forum and the people celebrating the good results and on social media as well. We're not always great at replying, but we try and like them just to show you that we've at least seen it, and it does sort of put a smile on our face. So thanks to you both again, and anything to leave our listeners with?
We'll be traveling up to Sydney to watch a Bombers game this weekend, so
we will be.
first away trip for quite a while for me. So, go Bombers.
Mm, yeah, I'm just looking forward to it being a competitive one. So, yeah, looking forward to that. Faz, Dunny, anything to leave our listeners with?
Not really. Just hope everyone got through the buys really well and have set themselves up for the run home. And if you haven't, don't worry. I'm sure there's plenty of us in the same boat. So good luck for the rest of the season, and look forward to catching up with you guys again in a few weeks.
All right, awesome. Thanks, fellas, and catch you all next week. See ya.
See you, everyone.
Bye. Don't want this get crazy. Don't want this get crazy. Let's get crazy.